just don't realize what you do to me when you hold me in your arms so tight.
Welcome to Nerd Nerd Nerdy here at Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Titania, and I bring you all the nerd news and all the nerd information you need for your life, because yes, let's face it, you need it. For the next hour, we're going to be heading on some three sections. The first section is about news. The second section is about some superhero movies. And the last section, called The Hitchhiker's Guide to Game of Thrones, perhaps is of some interest to you guys. Okay, so we are listening now to Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede. By the end of the show, you perhaps may know where all of the songs on today's show are from. We're definitely gonna mention where they are from, the soundtrack, I mean. But you may have to figure it out if you're not familiar with the movie. Okay, heading on to our first segment called The Quibbler, we're going to speak about some nerdy news. Today, I have X-Men and the Beast. It looks like Nicholas Holt's run as the Beast might be coming to an end after the next installment of the X-Men franchise, X-Men Apocalypse. It's the last one that he's signed up for, and X-Men Apocalypse is the last one in a trilogy of X-Men films that are concentrated on the first class of X-Men. So the film, the director said, will spend some more time concentrating in the relationship between Beast and Mystique. Let's hope that Holt will consider coming out for another X-Men movie, because he is a really good Beast. That's one of my favorite characters, actually. Moving right along, Comcast and net neutrality. This is something that we should all be worried about, not only nerds or geeks. So what's been going on is that Comcast has been blocking HBO Go on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3. So by doing this, Comcast could be violating one of the FCC's newly passed net neutrality rules. So what's net neutrality, for those of you who don't know? The first focus of the order that the FCC published on Thursday, the Open Internet Order, is, as the FCC chairman Tom Wheeler explained, is to eliminate three practices that are exceedingly harmful to free internet, that is, blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization. So yeah, it seems that internet providers could not block, throttle, or prioritize by payment any type of different websites. I think that this is very important for the welfare, for the health of internet, and our, like, the health of free speech in general, because internet, let's face it, is free speech nowadays. So their customers, that is, should get any service that they paid for in fullest form, and they should not be charged in any way further for favors favors particular content. A person engaged in the provision of broadband internet access service shall not block lawful content, applications, services, or non-harmful devices subject to reasonable network management, blah blah. The point is that the reasonable network management, there has an exception that is mentioned in the above rule, and it states that the provider may block or throttle a service or app so long as it has a technical issue, a technical justification for doing so, and doesn't relate to business decisions. So if Comcast has a network management reason for blocking the app, then it may be considered an exception to the rules. But in February 18, a forum response of a Comcast employee said that HBO Go availability on PS3 and some other devices were a business decision and deal with business terms that have not yet been agreed to between the parties. So if the decision is indeed based on business matters and not technical issues, as Comcast says, then the provider might not have regulatory power over HBO on Sony consoles. So this is something to think about, guys, especially on the future of the internet. So let's move right along to some happier news. The live-action movie of Beauty and the Beast, Disney's Beauty and the Beast, has a release date for March 17, 2017, in 3D, the studio has announced today. So this is rather happy news, especially after Emma Watson was cast as Belle and Dan Stevens as the Beast. Kevin Kline also joined the cast today as Belle's father Maurice, and also Luke Evans as Gaston and George Gath as Gaston's lucky LeFou. So we can also mention that Cinderella has had a very successful release at the box office this weekend, debuting in first place with an estimated $7.1 million, guys. This is worldwide. This Cinderella made $132.1 million worldwide, with a sterile $25 million from China. So this is better from the director. This is the best hit the director has had in the box office since Thor. It's better than Thor, actually, that made $65.7 million, guys. So a Disney movie beat Thor. Well, actually, Marvel is now Disney, so it doesn't matter, really. But okay, it doesn't matter. It's a battle between blonde Disney princesses anyway, Thor and Cinderella. Okay, moving right along. The goat of Goat Simulator, I hope you know it, it's going to be on Dota. It happens to be that it will be available as a courier. The couriers are creatures that carry weapons and other items to the base, to your characters. The Goat Simulator developer Coffee Stain used the Steam Workshop tools to submit its code courier to Valve for consideration. We hope that the code will be available, as it is very cute and very funny. When you buy the upgraded courier, it has a jetpack and it cruises upside down. It's very funny, guys. You must play the Goat Simulator if you haven't. You will have some laughs. Moving right along, the Steam concurrent user record has been breached by 9 million users today, this past week. So according to Steam usage statistics page, the figure picked at 9.06 users around 13:30 a.m. The games that were most being played were Dota 2, of course, Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, and Team Fortress 2. Those were the top three games being played on the platform, respectively. Steam has recently surpassed user records in early January with a figure of 8.5 million, and prior to that, the platform hit 7 million users over Thanksgiving holiday weekend in 2013. So, remember that last show we talked about Oculus Rift and the VR New Frontier, the virtual reality New Frontier for gaming? Well, it seems that Oculus Rift would not be joining us this year with a late 2015 release. It seems that it's less and less likely that that will happen. Speaking at a panel during SXXW, Oculus founder Palmer Luckey explained that he wasn't able to say anything about its release, but people didn't need to worry that anything was amiss with development. Exactly, he said, and I quote, "I can't comment on the release date one way or another, in either direction, but I can say that nothing is going horribly wrong," he said. "Everything is going horribly right." Well, I can't imagine how things can go horribly right, but if you say so, Palmer, I will take your word for it. So, when we speak about great different series of this past few years, we can mention American Horror Story between those, right? At least it is in my list of special TV series that I love. And one of the main reasons that it is up there in my list is because of Jessica Lange. Well, as it was previously talked about or rumored, she is leaving the show. She talked about this at a panel last week in Pali Feast yesterday. So she said exactly, yes, I am done. You know, we've had a great run here. I mean, I have absolutely loved doing these four characters that I've had the opportunity to play. In all the madness, I've loved the writers and my actors and Ryan Murphy and all the whole, I mean, insanity of it. Yes, it was insane. And we will miss you, Lange. I mean, Lady Gaga, with all her absolute fabulousness, will not be able to fill your shoes. I can't think of anyone who could, really. You are perfect, you're wonderful, and I will miss you. And it was also announced that Matt Bomer and Cheyenne Jackson will be in the next series. The next series will portray a hotel. I mean, they're really spot on with their branding and with their, like, with the things they choose to write about. I can't, like, they really take my breath away. Well, they're really wonderful. Moving on, more drama with comic books. This time we have Jason Momoa saying something terribly controversial. Well, not saying exactly, saying and writing, perhaps. Saying terribly controversial about Marvel. Perhaps you have seen or heard about this. Well, he did write the F word in one of his posters when he was asked to sign it. But the point of it, of this, is not that he wrote this word, is what came after this, because he wrote F Marvel. So yes, Jason Momoa is on the DC's team forever and ever. He's actually not going to change teams, or is he? I don't know, perhaps. But it's hard to think about that he was actually considered for the role of Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. And what he said about this is that Dave Bautista is the guy that portrays the role of Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. Of course, Drax is the buff guy, the buff blue and red guy in Guardians of the Galaxy. So what he says is exactly and I quote, "Dave is perfect for that role, for Drax. It didn't really fit in my time because I've done so many things where I don't say much and I'm colored up and I have my shirt off again. I made a conscious choice to turn down some movies that were action-based to direct Road to Paloma so people could see that side. I want my children to see their father happy. It's not that it's not a good role. It just wasn't the right thing. I was on Stargate Atlantis for 4 years playing a similar character, Ronan, who was an alien who didn't say much and grunted. I've been there and done that, whether people have seen it or not. You want to stretch." I respect Momoa for this reason. I mean, I really want to see more of him as an actor because he's writing what he says, and perhaps he does have something else to him that we haven't seen. He does seem like a pretty flat guy from what we've seen from him. And perhaps there's more to him that we don't know. So I'll give him at least the points for trying. I mean, it's pretty good that he's trying. But I don't know. He's really really hot-headed about saying that, because if you enter this, like, the superhero world and then you are just considered for the role of another superhero in Marvel, is he just not going to take it? I mean, let's face it. he's not buying me with that. Okay, moving on to this week's releases. We have some big releases this week, guys, in gaming. I mean, gaming is finally waking up from its winter sleep. We have especially Battlefield Hardline that is releasing tomorrow after its big debut last year in the E3. You can buy it for PS4, PS3, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC. It's almost $60. I mean, if you like Battlefield, I'm sure you would like Battlefield Hardline. It was available for beta and alpha and stuff. You were able to play it before. If you haven't, I mean, why did you miss it if you like Battlefield? I don't know. Then you have Devil May Cry Definitive Edition that is also releasing tomorrow. It's almost $40 for PS4 and Xbox One. I don't really like this reboot of Devil May Cry. If you like it, go check it out. Then we have Final Fantasy Type O HD. It's releasing tomorrow. $60 for PS4, Xbox One. I mean, it's a remastering HD of Final Fantasy Type O. Another one of those. Then we have Resident Evil Revelations 2, Episode 4. You can download it for PS4, Xbox One, Xbox 360, and PC. This is the fourth and final chapter in the series of this Revelations, Resident Evil chapters, blah, blah. I mean, if you're following it, then go ahead and buy it or download it. Then we have Forza Horizons 2, Presents Past and Furious. This is a standalone version of Forza Horizons 2, and it has cars and a storyline based on the blockbuster Fast and Furious franchise. It's releasing tomorrow on Xbox One and Xbox 360. The Awakened Fate Ultimatum, well, that's a name, is releasing tomorrow, $40 for PS3. Of course, as you may have guessed, is a follow-up to a hit Japanese RPG that's called the Guided Fate Paradox. It seems that it's very well known. I mean, I don't know about it, but you may know about it. If you like RPGs, then go ahead and check it out. Then we have Worlds of Magic. It's $40 for PC on Steam, and it's releasing Thursday. And this is a turn-based 4X. And if you don't know what a 4X is this is a genre of strategy-based video and board games in which players control an empire and they explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate. A very good example of this is Civilization. So yeah, they're very fun if you like strategy games, I mean. It seemed like really interesting when I saw the trailers, so if you like this type of games, then you should definitely go ahead and take a look at it. Then we have Elliot Quest, that is a Wii U downloadable release on Thursday. That is an adventure RPG with a retro pixel look. So that's nice. Go Wii U. We also have Mario Party 10 for Wii U. That is $50, or you can buy it for $59.96, bundled with Mario Amiibo. That's nice, the Amiibos. It's releasing on Friday. And, well, it seems that we have yet another Mario Party. I like Mario Parties, though. Many people don't, but I like them. Then we have Fossil Fighters Frontier. That is releasing Friday, and it's $30 for the 3DS. And it's a series that I don't know anything about. But if you do, then you might want to know this information. So this is all for the Quibbler, our segment on news. This is DJ Titania on Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore everything about nerdy news and information. We are going on a break. The next segment is the new, the old, and the ugly of superhero films. I'm gonna leave you with a song that I know you're gonna love. So please stay tuned for our next segment here at Nerd Nerd Nerdy. Welcome back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore everything you need to know about nerdy culture. Here in this segment, we're going to talk about the new, the old, and the ugly of superhero films. Well, you may know about these three superhero films that I'm going to talk about, especially about the second one if you are really nerdy, and very likely about the first one if you just go to see every blockbuster that there's out there. So, let's start with the new. The new is Guardians of the Galaxy. Of course, it was released in 2014, and it's, of course, a superhero film based on Marvel Comics that they are called also Guardians of the Galaxy. It was produced by Marvel Studios, but as you know, as you may have heard already, Marvel Studios was bought a few years back by Disney. So, this is the 10th installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is very important, guys, because Marvel is building all these movies around its universe, and it's very important that we get to know this whole subplot that's going on. And this film is very good at bringing some new information about that. So, the film was directed by James Gunn, and he wrote the screenplay with Nicole Perlman. It was really good, and that's why I wanted to mention them. I thought it was brilliant. It was one of the best superhero films that I've seen in a long time. And it has a very good ensemble cast, including Chris Pratt as our protagonist, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Lee Pace, Michael Rooker, Karen Gillan, blah, blah, blah. Also, Benicio del Toro had like a starlight appearance. Well, Peter Quill here in the Guardians of the Galaxy forms an uneasy alliance with a group of extraterrestrial misfits who are fleeing after stealing a powerful artifact, and they end up being unlikely heroes. Of course, this is a cliche. We all know that superheroes are like fantasy tales of the new age. And this is a cliche, after all, in as regards plot. But it is very interesting in the way it is told, especially through its visual effects and its soundtrack. Guardians of the Galaxy premiered in Hollywood July 21st last year, and it was released in theaters August the 1st. The reason that I'm mentioning this is because a sequel is scheduled to be released May 5th, 2017. But this sequel was announced the 26th of July. So guys, this 21st of July, it was premiered in Hollywood. And before it was released in theaters, already a sequel was scheduled. So you knew it was that good even before you went to see it. Guardians of the Galaxy was a hit before it hit theaters. So, we can see in Guardians of the Galaxy a fictional spacefaring superhero team that appear in comic books. No? They are also, of course, they are published by Marvel. And this is a team that was actually conceived by, in the comic books, by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning in 2008. And they combined previously unrelated characters created by a variety of writers and artists with an initial roster in Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon, Quasar, Adam Warlock, Gamora, Drax the Destroyer, and Groot. The ones that we see in the movie are actually Star-Lord, that's the protagonist, Rocket Raccoon, Gamora, Drax the Destroyer, and Groot. So Quasar we see, but very little, and Adam Warlock we don't. So, the modern team is the second one, as I said, and it was formed in 2008. The original team was created by Arnold Drake and Jim Collin in 1969, guys. This is a very old comic book. It's nothing new under the sky. These Guardians first appeared in Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2, Number 1st, May 2008. What I wanted to mention in this movie is sci-fi, space exploration, other worlds, other races. We get to see more of the underlying plotline of the Marvel Universe regarding aliens. Of course, I'm very disappointed about this fact in particular, as regards Fantastic Four and Green Lantern, because they are both like the basis of the alien races in the Marvel Universe. And both of those movies were really disappointing. I mean, I'm not even going to talk about them, but they are. And we get to explore all these fantastic and technological elements that are really far away. I just love these kinds of movies. So, moving on to the old, I'm going to talk about Batman by Tim Burton in 1989. This is a classic. This is the classic of classics in Batman. Have you ever danced with the devil by the pale moonlight, guys? Oh my goodness. This was directed, of course, by Tim Burton before, but he was booked by this to do this job before he had any credibility as a director. So it wasn't until after he had a success with Beetlejuice that they actually started shooting the film. So it's very important for Tim Burton's career. I mean, and last week we talked about him, but I mean, I really had to mention this. It's in my heart. I couldn't keep off of this. So, and it's based on DC Comics of Batman, but it's especially based on The Killing Joke, that it's a comic, a very iconic Batman comic, written by Alan Moore, that is one of the main comic writers of the century. I mean, he's the writer of Watchmen. If you know that movie, or if you know that comic, that would be even better. That's the mentor of Neil Gaiman. Yes, ring a bell. And it was also based on some elements of The Dark Knight Returns, that was written by, of course, that's also the comic book in which one of the latest movies or trilogies of Batman was based on. And this comic was written by Frank Miller. That's also the writer for Sin City. Yes, guys, everything's connected. Great writers don't just pop out of nowhere and just exist. Okay, so this is the first installment of the Warner Bros. Initial Batman film series. Here in the film, Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton star in the film. Michael Keaton, now many people may know him for Birdman, but at that time he was very doubted for the role. I'm going to talk in a little bit about Jack Nicholson because he deserves a whole other section. But Michael Keaton, he comes into this category of people that are just doubted for Batman roles. People thought that he was going to be another Adam West and he was just going to make fun of the role because he was known for funny roles. And actually, when he came into this role, he killed it. Michael Keaton's one of the greatest Batmans there ever was. I mean, of course, Christian Bale now is very good. We all look up to him, but Michael Keaton was very good, guys. We must not forget him. And now a similar thing is happening with this guy, Ben Affleck, that is going to come up in the new Superman versus Batman movie. And I mean, I just have all my faith into Ben Affleck. I mean, he has all my faith for this role. If he lets me down, then he lets me down. But I mean, please, guys, stop hating on him. He will do a good job. He has the chin, okay? So, basically, what the film talks about is the story of The Killing Joke. And it basically tells the story of how the Joker came to being. And it's not a spoiler. It's from 1989. Come on, guys. But Jack Nicholson, the greatest Joker of all time, may Heath Ledger forgive me in his grave. Heath Ledger was glorious too, but Jack Nicholson is just breathtaking. I mean, I have to say it again. Have you ever danced with the devil by the pale moonlight? It's just too much to take. He just portrays a person that has gone absolutely nuts so perfectly that is just too much for me. And it's really very good. If you haven't seen it already, I recommend you to just go ahead and see it now. Don't go watch every old Batman movie, because there are some duds. And not Schumacher. Schumacher. But you must watch this one. And the other Tim Burton movie, the one with the penguin, you must watch that one too. Glorious work. But in this movie in particular, Jack Nicholson steals the show. I mean, even though Michael Keaton's very good, Kim Basinger is blah, but Jack Nicholson is just glorious. If you can immortalize a phrase in pop culture, a phrase, a look, I mean, you're just everything. I'm just so sad of what's happening to him now. I mean, if you look at both of these great actors, one has seen a rebirth by winning an Oscar with this great movie, and one is just now cannot work anymore and just cannot remember who he is. And Alzheimer's is a terrible disease. So that makes me really sad too. So I'm gonna move along to the next topic. About the ugly, I mean, I could mention movies like The Green Lantern. I could mention The Batman by Schumacher, but I'm not, because there has been enough hating on DC. There has been enough. And I mean, I like Marvel, but I do like DC a lot too. I like the Vertical line better, but I do like DC a lot. And it's not fair what's happening. It's not fair what DC is doing to their characters either. But still, please, if you do if you just make a Martian Manhunter movie, I will be pleased. Just go on. Okay, moving right along. The ugly, in my opinion, is Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire. I'm so glad that he's out of the series, out of the movies for Spider-Man. I mean, Spider-Man is just such a lively, joyful character. He's a teenager. He's doing his thing, just being happy and being the greatest he can be. He's awesome. I mean, Spider-Man's awesome. He's funny. He's the resident funny guy of superheroes in Marvel. He just takes everything with a grain of salt and makes a joke. And really, he is very flawed as a superhero and as a human being, because he's a teenager. I really don't care about lines in the comics that try to make him look a lot older. But when we take a look at this movie, I mean, they take two great Batman enemies, Sandman and Venom, and they just shh on them, okay? They just don't care about them. I mean, Venom is one of the greatest enemies of all time. Well, it's not like that, but I really like him. I really like his look. I really like his thing. I really like him. He's not a Lex Luthor. He's not a Joker, but he's really good. And they just made him into this horrible thing. It's just not what I imagined, what I knew Venom was. I mean, the visual effects were awesome. It was at the time, at least for 2 or 3 weeks, the movie that was more expensive. But I mean, what they did, I cannot forget this part where Peter was possessed by Venom and he was acting all bad, and he had like this change of haircut, and Tobey Maguire had this strange look in his eyes. It was just so sad, guys. I cannot live past that. I just cannot. That scene just ruined the whole movie for me. I mean, it wasn't worth it. And the whole adding of the other love interest, Gwen Stacy, I mean, I get it that if you add Venom, you have to add Gwen Stacy, but why? Why Venom there? Why, guys? Why? Do not do this. Why are you ruining Spider-Man? I thought at the time. I mean, it was 2007. And now, I mean, they rebooted the thing. They made two movies that were okay-ish. I mean, they were nice. They were fun. Lizard Man was fun. It was okay. And now they're rebooting it again? Again? Why? Stop. Just stop. I mean, it's not a full reboot, but just bringing the Sinister Six, they're bringing these villains from Spider-Man, and they just have to bring in Spider-Man 2, and they have to change. No, they don't have to, but they will change the full, like, the actor. So why? Why are you doing this to me again? I cannot cope with so many Spider-Mans in my lifetime. This is just too much. I mean, not in my lifetime, but it's in just such a short span of time. In just, like, I don't know, 2 decades, but less than 2 decades. I mean, it's just not okay. Okay, so that's the end of the new, the old, the ugly of superhero movies. Next segment is going to be The Hitchhiker's Guide to Game of Thrones or A Song of Ice and Fire. I mean, it's going to be A Song of Ice and Fire, but it's up to you to decide if you prefer one or the other. Now we're going to a little break. I'm going to leave you with a song. I hope you enjoy it. And this is radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Titania with Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore nerd culture. Please stay tuned for the next segment. And here's the song.
Listen, baby, ain't no mountain high, ain't no valley low, ain't no river wide enough, baby.
If you need me, call me, no matter where you are, no matter how far.
Don't worry, baby,
just call my name, I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to worry,
cause baby, there ain't no mountain high enough.
Welcome back to Nerd Nerd Nerdy, where we explore, everything you need to know about nerd culture. In this segment, we're going to talk about The Hitchhiker's Guide to Game of Thrones or A Song of Ice and Fire. I mean, you may not know the name A Song of Ice and Fire, but you most surely know about A Game of Thrones or Game of Thrones. Actually, the show Game of Thrones is based on a series of books by George R.R. Martin that are called, in a whole, A Song of Ice and Fire. So this is a series of epic fantasy novels written by George R.R. Martin. He began his first novel, his first volume, A Game of Thrones, in 1991, guys, and it was first published in 1996. He gradually extended his original intended trilogy to 7 volumes, and the 5th, A Dance with Dragons, took him 5 years to write before its publication in 2011. He has publicly hinted that the series might be stretched to an 8th volume. Let's hope it's not, Martin. It's not. You're taking so long with Winds of Winter that it's still on the way after several delays. So, the story of A Song of Ice and Fire takes place in a fictional continent of Westeros and Essos. The point of view of each chapter in the story is a limited perspective of an assortment of characters that grows from 9 in its first to 31 in the 5th novel. So, those of us who are reading this novels actually have to cope with 31 points of view to get to know the story. This is actually very rich, but at the same time it's very confusing for some people, and not many can do it. 3 predominant stories interweave. First, we have the dynastic war among several families for control of Westeros. Then we have the rising threat of the superhuman others beyond Westeros' northern border. And third, the ambition of Daenerys Targaryen, the exiled daughter of a king, to assume her ancestral throne. This is actually pretty accurate, and Martin's sources include The War of the Roses and the French historical novels. You can actually match some of the characters with some historical figures. And also he uses the Accursed Kings, My Maurice Drawn. That's actually somewhere from where he draws much inspiration. Also, Tolkien is a very good inspiration for him. And if you are into fantasy and you haven't read Tolkien, I mean, why? Why on earth? A Song of Ice and Fire has been favorably critiqued all over the world. And some of the points that are very strong is the diverse portrayal of women and religion, and the praise of favoring realism over magic. I mean, what he wanted to do was to take fantasy and take it to the next level. In what way, you may ask? I mean, he thought that fantasy epic novels that were set in different medieval settings were often very fantastic, let's say, and were usually only pinpointing magic elements rather than historical elements. But he also thought that he didn't want to write a historical novel. So he actually fused both of those, and he ended up having these books that are very gritty and very realistic, although that sounds like an oxymoron, like something that's very opposite to fantasy. It is very opposite to fantasy, but he portrays a world that is believable. Although you have dragons, although you have white walkers, although you have undead people, although you have gnomes, although you have a bit of magic, although you have alchemy, although you have all these things, you still have political intrigue, you still have sex scenes, you still have nudity, you still have rape, you still have all these things that happened in the real world, real medieval world. And they are gritty, and there's death, and there's uncertainty, and it sounds crude, and it is, guys. I mean, if you see the show is very much acclaimed for in one hand, and on the other hand, it's also very critiqued for nudity, for sexism, for the crudeness of its scenes. But I must tell you, although some of these scenes are actually from the show alone, many of the scenes are taken from the books, and I must tell you, they are mild compared to the descriptions that are present in the books. And that's something that I praise. I mean, the series actually for me as a reader has been good. I mean, it has reached my expectations. Although you may say it's not the best series ever, it is a good series. It is a series that portrays the books as they are mostly. The problem now is that we have 5 books that are printed. A Game of Thrones was the first book released in August 1996. A Clash of Kings was released in February 1999, and A Storm of Swords was released in November 2000. Those were the first 3 books that he had already planned out before he set out for printing, for publishing. And then when he set out to write the next book that he thought was going to be A Dance with Dragons, it ended up being so long that he had to cut it into 2, and it ended up being A Feast for Crows, published in November 2005, and A Dance with Dragons, that it was published in July 2011. We're still waiting for The Winds of Winter, and it's been a long wait, and the books are not getting any shorter. I mean, not complaining, but they're not getting any shorter. And after The Winds of Winter, supposedly is coming A Dream of Spring. And it has not been released the name of the 8th book, if there is going to be an 8th book. And as regards the TV series, season 1 tells the story of the first book, A Game of Thrones. Season 2 tells the story of A Clash of Kings. Season 1 was released in 2010, season 2 in 2011. Actually, season 3 talks about the first half of the 3rd book, A Storm of Swords, and it was released in 2012. But in season 4, this is where it gets tricky, and this is where we readers had like a bit of a mix-up, because we started seeing things that were not from A Storm of Swords. I mean, it started telling about the second half of Storm of Swords, and it also started compiling elements from A Feast for Crows, and also from A Dance with Dragons, and also elements that weren't even in the books yet. So it was this season was released last year, and it was really unnerving for some of us. Season 5 is supposedly gonna incorporate elements from A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons, and we all know up to this moment that it's going to include elements from what the writers know is going to be what comes next in the series of books. Martin has given the ending of the series to the writers of the show so that they can continue the show regardless of what's his path with the books. I mean, they have already said in 2013 that they probably get through the 7 seasons and no more of that, because the series will lose momentum if they stretch it any longer, or if they wait for Martin to finish the books. So we are probably looking at a series that will end before the books are even finished publishing. So that's very, very weird in my opinion, but I mean, if that's the way to go, then that's the way to go. The series, as I said, is very controversial because of the amount of sex and nudity, and especially in scenes that are incidental to the plot. And this was the focus of much of the criticism aimed at the series in the first and second season. People said that it was lighthearted sex position. I mean, there is a lot of nudity, female nudity especially, not so much male nudity. They're starting to show male nudity with time. They said that there is an excess of random boobage. I don't know. I mean, I agree up to some extent, but at the same time, I read the books, so I know what's behind it. also in the third season, there's a character that's called Theo Granger, and he's tortured at length. And many people criticize the use of this torture. So, I mean, why are they criticizing a show that uses, that is based on books? I mean, what is it supposed to do? I mean, now people are actually or outraged or just all in favor of 50 Shades of Grey. And then some random guy just yells, oh, it's torture, you can't portray torture. I mean, you have to pay it, it's HBO, guys, just get over it. And also there's a scene in the fourth season that was actually pretty controversial, in fact, because there was a rape scene and it wasn't actually in the books, so I can't I cannot defend it. But I mean, it's part of the show. It's part of, it adds to the grittiness of the show. And it's not something that would not happen in the show. So there you go. Also, I must mention that the scenes, like the scenery, it's filmed in Belfast, it's filmed in Morocco, it's filmed everywhere around the world. The budget of this series, it's astounding. It also raises a lot of money, by the way. And it's absolutely amazing, as it is the costuming that is very detailed and very, very good, actually. Although it's not perfectly to the book, I mean, it's a very good interpretation. I absolutely appreciate it. And casting is glorious, especially, of course, as we all know, Peter Dinklage. He's the perfect guy for the role. So the show, as we were saying, is great. We must also say that A Song of Ice and Fire has one of the greatest, most international big fandoms that there are, because of it's all the rage now, really. And that's actually very good. It's something that it's reviving, it's breathing into fantasy, something that fantasy was actually very milded down for a while. And then this came about. And I was really happy about it because, I mean, I play tabletop games, I read fantasy, I do all this stuff. And then suddenly there comes this series just charging on the average population that doesn't, that is not interested in all this other stuff that I'm interested in. And they are all just very, very much interested in it. It's just because of the quality that this this books and the series has of compelling you to like the characters, of just rooting for somebody because you know that there's a chance that they'll die. It's not a battle of good against evil where the good one will win and there's not a chance in hell that he'll die or he'll lose. You know, in Tolkien, is good against evil, and you know that Aragorn and Bilbo and Frodo and Gandalf, they'll all win because they are the light. Sauron's the darkness, he'll perish, but the light will survive. In this case, you don't know what's the light and what's the darkness. Everything's gray, everything's a middle point. You don't know who to root for. You must base yourself upon who you like the best or who you think is right in which situation. I mean, everyone roots for Daenerys the first few seasons, and then suddenly they start realizing that she's not as perfect as they thought, for example. Or they root for the Starks at first, but then suddenly, something happens at the end of the first season or at the end of the third. You have to watch the show or read the books. But, I mean, that's a turning point when you realize, well, I cannot not watch one of the episodes. I cannot lose the track on this because it will be the death of me. It will be the death of my dreams and the dreams of my characters. And that's very important here. Something that I found very amusing when I found out is that Martin was, well, not this, what comes next, but he was actually a successful fantasy and science fiction author and TV writer before writing A Song of Ice and Fire. He had published his first short story in 1971 and his first novel in 1977. By the mid-90s, he had won 3 Hugo Awards, 2 Nebulas, and 3 another awards for his short fiction. And although his early books were all well received within the fantasy fiction community, his readership remained relatively small, and Martin took on jobs as writer in Hollywood in the mid-80s. He principally worked on the revival of The Twilight Zone throughout the 86 and on Beauty and the Beast until 1990. But he also developed his own TV pilots and wrote feature film scripts. He grew frustrated that his pilots and screenplays were not getting made and that TV-related production limitations like budgets and episode lengths were forcing him to cut characters and trim battle scenes. That's what pushed him back towards writing books, where he did not have to worry about compromising the size of his imagination. And we're so lucky about that. So lucky that he admired the works of Tolkien and he wanted to write an epic fantasy without having any specific ideas, just broad and just pouring his imagination onto the papers. We're reaching now the end of the show. Thank you for accompanying me on this hour where we explored all the corners, all the dark, gritty corners of nerd culture with me, DJ Titania, at Nerdy here in radio.dominican.edu. I'm going to leave you with a song that I know you're going to love. It's Moonage Daydream by David Bowie. And if you hadn't guessed already, these are all songs from The Awesome Mix Volume 1, the soundtrack from Guardians of the Galaxy. It is the best soundtrack from a movie ever that I have ever listened to ever. So I hope you like it, and we'll listen to each other next week. Please tune in tomorrow for more student shows here at Penguin Radio, and we'll listen to each other next week. Bye-bye.
I'm an alligator. I'm a mama, papa coming for you. I'm a space invader. I'll be a rock and rolling bitch for you. Keep your mouth shut. You're squawking like a big monkey bird. And I'm busting up my brain for the world. Keep your electric on me, baby. With your ray gun smile.
like to see a mule, but it's my sound. 15 miles on the Erie Canal. A friend of mine once got a sore. Now he's got a broken jaw. Cause she let fly with I am told and kicked him back.